Chapter 6. Tristan would never have won any prizes as an exponent of the haute cuisine. We got better food in the RAF than most people in wartime Britain, but it didn't compare with the Darrowby fare. I suppose I had been spoiled, first by Mrs. Hall, then by Helen. There were only brief occasions at Skeldale House when we did not eat like kings, and one of those was when Tristan was installed as temporary cook. It began one morning at breakfast in the days when I was still a bachelor, and Tristan and I were taking our places at the mahogany dining table. Siegfried bustled in, muttered a greeting, and began to pour his coffee. He was unusually distrait as he buttered a slice of toast and cut into one of the rashers on his plate. Then, after a minute's thoughtful chewing, he brought down his hand on the table with a suddenness that made me jump. "I've got it!" he exclaimed. "Got what?" I inquired. Siegfried put down his knife and fork and wagged a finger at me. "Silly, really. I've been sitting here puzzling about what to do, and it's suddenly clear." "Why? What's the trouble?" "It's Mrs. Hall," he said. "She just told me her sister has been taken ill, and she has to go look after her. She thinks she'll be away for a week, and I've been wondering who I could get to look after the house."
"I see."
"Then it struck me." He sliced a corner from a fried egg. "Tristan can do it."
"Eh?"
His brother looked up, startled, from his daily mirror.
"Me?"
"Yes, you. You spend a lot of time on your arse. Bit of useful activity would be good for you."
Tristan looked at him warily.
"What do you mean, useful activity?"
"Well, keeping the place straight," Siegfried said. "I wouldn't expect perfection, but you could tidy up each day, and of course, prepare the meals."
"Meals?"
"That's right."
Siegfried gave him a level stare.
"You can cook, can't you?"
"Well, yes. I can cook sausage and mash." Siegfried waved an expansive hand.
"There you are, I see. No problem. Push over those fried tomatoes, will you, James?"
I passed the dish silently. I had only half heard the conversation because part of my mind was far away. Just before breakfast, I'd had a phone call from Ken Billings, one of our best farmers, and his words were still echoing in my head. "Mr. Harriet, that calf you saw yesterday is dead. That's the third one I've lost in a week, and I'm flummoxed. I want you out here this morning to have another look round."
I sipped my coffee absently.
He wasn't the only one who was flummoxed. Three fine calves had shown symptoms of acute gastric pain. I had treated them, and they had died. That was bad enough. But what made it worse was that I hadn't the faintest idea what was wrong with them. I wiped my lips and got up quickly.
"Siegfried, I'd like to go to Billings first. Then I've got the rest of the rounds you gave me."
"Fine, James, yeah, by all means." My boss gave me a sweet and encouraging smile, balancing a mushroom on a piece of fried bread, and conveyed it to his mouth. He wasn't a big eater, but he did love his breakfast. On the way to the farm, my mind beat about helplessly. What more could I do than I'd already done? In these obscure cases, one was driven to the conclusion that the animal had eaten something harmful. At times, I spent hours roaming around pastures looking for poisonous plants, but that was pointless with Billings calves because they had never been out. They were mere babies of a month old. I had carried out post-mortem examinations of the dead animals, but had found only a non-specific gastroenteritis. I had sent kidneys to the laboratory for lead examination with negative results. Like their owner, I was flummoxed. Mr. Billings was waiting for me in his yard.
"Good job I rang you," he said breathlessly. "There's another one starting."
I rushed with him into the buildings and found what I expected, and dreaded. A small calf kicking at its stomach, getting up and down, occasionally rolling on its straw bed. Typical abdominal pain. But why? I went over it as with the others. Temperature normal, lungs clear, only ruminal atony and extreme tenderness as I palpated the abdomen. As I was putting the thermometer back in its case, the calf suddenly toppled over and went into a frothing convulsion. Hastily I injected sedatives, calcium, magnesium, but with a feeling of doom. I had done it all before.
"What the hell is it?"
the farmer asked, voicing my thoughts. I shrugged. "It's acute gastritis, Mr. Billings. But I wish I knew the cause. I could swear this calf has eaten some irritant or corrosive poison."
"Well, dang it, they've nobbut had milk and a few nuts." The farmer spread his hands. "There's nothing they can get to hurt him."
Again, wearily, I went through the old routine, ferreting around in the calf pen, trying to find some clue.
an old painting, a burst packet of sheep dip. It was amazing the things you came across in the clutter of the farm building, but not at Mr. Billing's place. He was meticulously tidy, particularly with his calves, and the windowsills and shelves were free from rubbish. It was the same with the milk buckets, scoured to spotless cleanliness after every feed. Mr. Billings had a thing about his calves. His two teenage sons were fanatically keen on farming, and he encouraged them in all the agricultural skills. But he fed the calves himself. "Fitting them cows is the most important job in stock-rearing," he used to say. "Get them over that first month and you're halfway there." And he knew what he was talking about. His charges never suffered from the normal ailments of the young. No scar, no joint ill, no pneumonia. I had often marvelled at it, but it made the present disaster all the more unbearable. "All right," I said with false breeziness as I left. "Maybe this one won't be so bad. Give me a ring in the morning." I did the rest of my round in a state of gloom, and at lunch I was still so preoccupied that I wondered what had happened when Tristan served the meal. I had entirely forgotten about Mrs. Hall's absence. However, the sausage and mash wasn't at all bad, and Tristan was lavish with his helpings. The three of us cleaned our plates pretty thoroughly, because morning is the busiest working time in practice, and I was always famished by midday. My mind was still on Mr. Billing's problem during the afternoon calls, and when we sat down to supper, I was only mildly surprised to find another offering of sausage and mash. "Same again, eh?" Siegfried grunted, but he got through his plateful and left without further comment. The next day started badly. I came into the dining room to find the table bare and Siegfried stamping around.
"Where the hell is our breakfast?"
he burst out.
"And where the hell is Tristan?"
He pounded along the passage, and I heard his shouts in the kitchen.
"Tristan! Tristan!"
I knew he was wasting his time. His brother often slept in, and it was just a bit more noticeable this morning.